Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me. This podcast is called Liberating the Queen. My name is Susie Mosco. I have decided to come up with an aggressive New Year's goal around learning about different females across history that aren't as well known as some of the male counterparts. I came up with this idea after watching the movie Hidden Figures, which I recommend everybody to watch, and seeing that sometimes females aren't really getting the credit that they deserve. My goal is to, on the 15th of every month, to be able to share one of the females that I didn't know anything about and hopefully give some more exposure to them in the world. I'm not sure if anybody will listen to this or if it'll just be me, but either way, I'll feel good about having completed a goal and completing a New Year's resolution. So please join me the 15th of every month for another topic and another female to learn about. You can always contact me at contact@liberatingthequeen.com and stay tuned to any of our social channels for updates on shows to come. Looking forward to chatting with everyone soon. Our first podcast, January 2018, episode 1, we've entitled A New You, Jean Bouret. I 100% apologize for butchering all of the French names. I am a girl from Northeast Minneapolis, Polish, German, and really have no accent outside of that. So I apologize for butchering the French names, but I really wanted to pay attention to the story. We're focusing on Jean Bouret, who is a French explorer and the first woman to circumvent the globe. She completed this task being disguised as a man. Unfortunately, when trying to do research on these hidden figure type females, there isn't a lot available. And in this case, nothing that we researched was written by Bouret herself. They are all through the lens of males on the voyage, and or corresponding documentation to show she was somewhere here or there. There's two folds as to why there might be little information. One, on these voyages, females were not permitted, as the voyages contained about 300 men or more. Two, men didn't want to feel they were duped by a female, so they instead didn't even acknowledge that she was on the boat or acknowledge that she was a part of the whole presence. So there's really a lot of conflicting information, and there's also a lot of conflicting assumptions throughout all of the research that we did. But I also want to try my best to make sure that Jean Bouret stays the center of the focus. As in a lot of the research, she's not necessarily the center, but it becomes about the male counterparts around her. So as we begin this podcast, I'm really going to do my best to ensure to do her some justice and try to provide that empathetic voice that she might not have or have been able to convey herself. So let's get ready to sail the high seas. In the summer of 1740, in a small town in France, Jean Bouret was born. Her birth certificate holds no signatures, suggesting that her parents aren't literate. The only signature is of the priest, and it's a shaky one, suggesting that it was an elder of the church. She grew up in a household where the family lived, as we say today, paycheck to paycheck, often starving in the winter months when work wasn't available. It was common for these European families not to move around and to find better work. Most families didn't travel more than 20 miles. So they were often stationary to these towns. They were more like day laborers, doing different tasks based on the day and what needed to be done. As she grew older, she was basically identified as a peasant woman from Burgundy. But with Bouret and her innate curiosity, she began following the feminine tradition known as an herb woman. Now, during this time, the field of science, and really science in general, was male-dominated. There was a feeling that women could not comprehend the level of complexity that came with science. Herb women tended to be part of the lower class. So there were a lot of scientists out there who really felt like herb women couldn't provide enough information to be scientific and or to add value in botany at all. However, there were some men who would leverage the knowledge of the herb women and either find medicinal plants that they could sell commercially and or be able to come up with miraculous discoveries across utilizing their knowledge of the many properties of these plants. Jean Barret, being that she was exceptional in this field, really developed a love and appreciation for all medicinal properties and the emerging field of taxonomy. Barret dedicated herself to understanding and classifying the natural world, which later in life she risks really life and limb for her love. In the early 1760s, she got the attention of Cormeson. Cormeson was, at the time, a widow. He had a small child to which he had entrusted his brother with while he was grieving his wife. Cormeson was very much in love with botany and in love with natural science himself, and they both were able to collaborate in a very scientific manner early on. Now, Cormeson was book smart and traditionally educated, where Barret was self-taught in the field of medicine as an herb woman. One of the quotes from the book, written by Glenlis Ridley, really depicts this whole experience and what we learned from our research. She was an herb woman, one schooled in largely oral tradition of curative properties of plants. Herb women were for centuries the source of all raw materials to be prepared, mixed, and sold by male medical practitioners. And as botany crystallized as a science in the 18th century, a handful of male botanists did not think it beneath them to learn from these specialists. In light, Barret was not Cormeson's pupil, but his teacher. Cormeson had craved a more field-type education. He grew tired and bored of a lot of the school books and the traditional education that he had had. So both of their adventurous spirits had really brought them together. Shortly after they had met, Barret had become Cormeson's housekeeper and rumored lover. Normally, people from two vastly different classes won't cross paths as such. Together, with their knowledge and education, they were able to start an herbal tea business. As they're building this business and this life together, it is noted through documentation that Jean Barret becomes pregnant. Through the documents that we have researched, there is no father identified on the birth certificate, but it is widely speculated that it is Cormeson's baby. As she gives the baby up for adoption, a few months later, around 1765, she finds out that the baby has passed. It is also during this time that we find out that Cormeson becomes very ill, and Barret becomes his primary caretaker. She stays by his bedside, she travels with him, she does many things with him to ensure that their herbal tea business can stay profitable, but also that their love can also bloom. During this time, Cormeson is offered to travel the world with a French explorer. Cormeson recognizes that he needs Barret to be his top assistant, not only because they have a love for each other and a love for science, but also because he needs a lot of care through a lot of the medical issues that he's experiencing. Now, again, through the documentation, it's a bit sporadic and a bit conflicting. Some would speculate he had tuberculosis. Some would speculate an embolism. Either way, it was clear that he was debilitated and being able to perform a lot of the rigorous needs that most scientists, explorers, or botanists would really see or would really be able to handle during this time. But Cormeson saw really an opportunity for profit and an opportunity to grow himself in a scientific matter and really represent France. So there wasn't really a good way for him to say no. Now, another conflicting part of the research was really the knowledge and or the plan that Jean Barret and or Cormeson came up with to disguise her as a female and or to continue or even attempt this voyage. But it wasn't until the day before he was to board the ship that he had announced he had found an assistant in Jean de Bonafay. Now, this is the first time that we see that Jean Barret had taken on another identity. Huge obstacles. The ship is called a Toilie. From 1766 to 1769, she boarded the ship, who was captained by Bougainville. A French royal ordinance that that forbade women to travel, now the male, Jean de Bonfoy, was on the ship. She had said she was an orphan, but she had extensive experience in botany. Cormason had selected her as his lead assistant, and they began the charade of not knowing one another. This is corroborated with all of Cormason's journaling from the voyage, where he is shocked and surprised at everything to find out that Jean Bernet is female. Cormason got one of the captain's private cabins, mainly because there was so much gear and things that were required to collect specimens from their journey. Now, this captain's cabin came with a private bathroom, and Jean Bernet, being his lead assistant, had a lot of access to this cabin, thus providing her the privacy that was required to continue the charade. She took the task all the other men on the ship did. She collected the botanical specimens, organized the collection, and organized all the papers for Cormason. Cormason was widely known as an unorganized scientist. So having someone there to help organize everything and to help carry and lead everything seemed legit. Most people on the ship just continued to assume she was male because Cormason would not carry anything. He would mainly just walk around and maybe take some notes, whereas she would carry all the equipment required, including going down and getting water, bringing it up to all the specimens, and really caring for everything. While on the ship, the mental toll of being confined in quarters for long periods of time, mainly being on these ships, they're infested with rats and disease, everything quickly took its toll. Cormason dealt with a leg ulcer and seasickness early in the voyage. When they first arrived to Rio de Janeiro, it is said that Jean Bernet discovered the most notable finding on the trip. Now, in later documentation, it is called the bougainvillea, which is a plant common in more tropical areas. In three cities of California, it is the official flower of that city. Cormason, now we know, continued to be unwell during all of these voyages. So it is some speculation that Jean Bernet would be the one who actually found this flower and discovered it. However, regardless if she was female or male, it is very common to have the leader of the voyage maintain the name rights to its largest discovery, which is why we see it named after the captain versus after Cormason or Jean Bernet. Now, during this voyage, you have to be mindful that Bernet, coming from a very peasantry background, again, her family never excursioned 20 miles out of their town, was able to climb through volcanic islands and go through all these major discoveries. The whole time she was going through all these, she carried a pistol with her. There was a lot of questions on if she was male or female from other patrons on the ship. She did not use the regular bathrooms. She did not grow a beard. She had told some of the crewmen that she was captured by Ottoman Turks and was castrated, thus making her a eunuch. She was very modest about her body. When times were hot and most of the men on the ship were stripped down, she maintained all of her clothing and made sure it was very baggy. Now, for 300 men on the ship, there are going to be considerable questions on the validity of her being a eunuch. She maintained the story that she was male, and she maintained the story that she was a eunuch. It wasn't until 18 months into the voyage that Jean Bernet was discovered. Now, here in the research that we did, it is very conflicting, as Bougainville states that it wasn't until the Etoile landed on the island of Tahiti that a group of Tahitian men identified her as a woman. And the French soldiers, and of course the higher class of the French men, saved her from being sexually assaulted from the Tahitian. Now, this is where you see quite a few different versions of the story and how she was discovered. Bougainville stands by his description in saying that it was handled with dignity when they discover Jean Bernet was a female. Now, the three most major accounts around this, one of this being the prince who was aboard the ship, he dressed more like a woman. He wore high heels and velvet. So a lot of the confusion around her being male or female could have been derived towards the prince being that he wore high heels, his wig had a lot of curls, and he wore velvet. But at the same time, Jean Beret was also going through it as well. So a lot of the language and the discrepancies in the language around being a transvestite could be just the confusion around, is it the prince or Jean Beret? However, during this stop in Papua New Guinea in New Ireland is where the dates match up with a few of the entries of the crewmen that say that as Jean Beret went down to clean some of the linens, this is when she had undergone a evaluation of if she's male or female. Now, the crew knew that she wanted to keep her modesty. But as you go into the details, it discusses in the surgeon's journal that she had rashes around her torsos from binding in the breast. The men took her on the beach and really did her a favor by calling out that she was a woman. Other crew members state that Beret was discovered as a woman in New Ireland or Papua New Guinea and gang raped by her crewmates. Jean Beret often carried a pistol when going on shore. The crew knew this, that she wanted to keep her modesty. She would often show her pistol when she was re-entering the boats or going back on the island just to ensure that people wouldn't want to see her castration. But in this particular instance, the journals really detail out, and the reason why I corroborate with Glennis Ridley's story is the details of her body that the surgeon calls out, the rashes around her torso from the bindings, and a lot of the other stories by the crewmates detail out how they really did her a favor by relinquishing this sexual violence on her and letting other women know that when you're on a boat with 300 men, this similar thing could happen. Now, in Bougainville's adaptation, it was handled with dignity, which makes sense for a person of his caliber. However, the surgeon has to be able to see it with the eyes of a medical professional. So being able to call out some of her eccentricities, some of her ailments with her naked body suggests that he was there as well. Sexual violence cannot be dismissed, nor can we be accusatory because it happened so long ago. In the research, there's a level of normalcy in the writing that she chooses to be on a ship of 300 men. She knew this might happen, thus legitimizing the assault. The narrative is something that most historians either don't want to address due to lack of evidence or just don't want it to be true. But at the end of the day, when we're reporting history, a lot of it is based on speculation of what people wrote. And it's clear to me, at least, in the journals of the other crew members that there was a sexual assault that took place on Jean Beret. And it's corroborated by some of the medicinals that were used after the assault. When one person writes something in a journal, you can definitely question it. But when multiple people corroborate some kind of assault happen and or hint to it, you kind of have to geared towards the side that something happened, but people just don't want to believe it. On this same day, there is an identified crew member who is given opiates to relax after a snake bite. This is dictated in the captain's log as well as the general surgeon's log of the ship. Some have speculated that this could be Jean Beret, who stumbled back on the ship after her attack. Chromosone remained that he was shocked that Jean Beret was a female. In his defense, he maintained and stayed by her side. After the excursion, Beret remained in the cabin for the remainder of the voyage. Journals show a clear detachment from being mentioned or leading excursions from this point forward. It is speculated he stayed with Jean Beret while she was recuperating, but also he had his own physical ailments that didn't allow him to continue with the rigor that's required to exploring in these tropical environments. Bougainville writes in his captain's log towards the end of his journey and discovery of Jean Beret, it's really a short paragraph that even addresses her, is that, and I quote, she will be the only one of her sex to circumvent the globe. And I admire her determination, but her example will hardly be contagious. And others can resonate with this, being that in the 2 years she was on the ship, she endured seasickness, loneliness, starvation, and the eventual violent assault that happened to her. Breakthrough of amazingness. While on the ship, after a continued long streak of docking bad luck, Bougainville attempts to reach out to the Dutch for help. For the first time in months, Cormason is leaving Jean Beret alone in the cabin as he joins the onshore party to seek help. For months and months now, they have attempted poorly to dock on other islands and other areas to really resupply the ship. Jean Beret has remained in her cabin. Once the Dutch governor was convinced that they were not there to steal, but really just needed general help to survive, the sick was also allowed to be placed in huts on shore. Bougainville insisted that Beret and Cormason were included in those huts on shore, partly because he wanted to do more exploration of the Dutch island without bringing any of the medicinal herbs back, but also it might be good for Beret and Cormason to continue their original botany initiatives, whereas now, since the assault, Beret confined herself mostly to the cabin. The next stop was Batavia, a trade mecca that allowed the ship to be repaired and fully restocked. Beret did not join the onshore mission, and no specimens were collected at this time. At this point, this is 2 months after the attack. This is the point where she realizes that she is now pregnant. During this time, when she discovers that she is pregnant, it's also known that when a pregnant woman is on the ship, it's very volatile to give birth on the ship, but also everything has to be documented. So at this point is when Bougainville and Cormason are really against having to document the actual sexual assault. Because if she gives birth on sea, and if everything becomes documented based on the level of inventory that's used for a woman to give birth, then they have to acknowledge that a sexual assault and or a rape actually happened. And if they acknowledge that, then they're going to have to put some of the officers or some of the people who were in charge, they'll be subjected to a trial. And Bougainville, again, trying to protect his name, I mean, I assume trying to protect his name and his status, didn't want that. Beret, finding herself pregnant, and Cormason and Bougainville, eager to make a deal, find themselves at Mauritius. Mauritius is French-owned, and it feels a lot safer than being on one of the Dutch-owned islands. At the time, Beret did not know this, but this would be her home for the next 7 years. Cormason meets a kindred spirit in a gentleman, Pauvier. Pauvier, who later we know in children's rhyme as Peter Piper, the Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Pauvier is someone who really discovers and capitalizes on the pepper as a spice. They have an immediate connection, really around their shared love of botany. This is an agreement among Cormason and Pauvier to allow Beret and Cormason to stay and begin to work on the shore. The voyage will continue without them. This, again, is an agreement that's unheard of in any kind of French hierarchy or any kind of documentation to allow scientists to actually leave a voyage. But circumstances being what they were, it made sense for them both to be on shore and for Beret to allow to carry her pregnancy on shore without it being documented on the voyage. They stay and really begin to start their life there. Colmesor having a higher class level of education and beginning, he has a lot of connections within the royal family and thus becomes quite the socialite on the island. In 1769, she gives birth to her second son. They find a farmer, which within our research, I believe, focused mostly on coffee, who didn't have any children at the time and was more than willing to take on a son and be able to raise him. We do see in later documentation around the time when this son would have been around 30, where he carries the name De Bonafé. This is the same name that she uses on the ship, which is believed to be the connection of her son, only because they're using that same name that she carried on the ship. In 1770, Barret and Cormason decide that they want to begin an expedition in Madagascar, which is 500 miles away. At this time, the expedition that they're on doesn't have the restrictive rules quite that the voyage of going around the globe did in allowing women to be on there. There was a lot of speculation and a lot of gossip around Commissar being unmarried and Jean Barret being unmarried, traveling together, but they were at a point in their life where they really didn't care and really wanted to go to Madagascar. And there you really start to see in their note-taking and in their research where they are again discovering that collaborative science relationship that we see so much throughout history. Slowly, as they're kind of rediscovering this and going through all this, Commerson still can't get over some of his debilitating ailments that have plagued him the last maybe 10 or 12 years, and he passes away in 1773. Now, through documentation, because there is no journaling at this point that we can find through Cormason or any one of his other assistants, we discover that Barret was fined as being a bar maiden. So the assumption that Cormason dies, Barret finds herself penniless again and takes up the role of being a barmaid. Barret marries French officer d'Urbanat, and they return to France in 1774. Now, when she returns to France, this completes her journey as the first female to really circumvent the entire globe. She wasn't really greeted with a hero's welcome, as nobody really knew who she was or why she was coming back. It wasn't until 1785 when Barret was living quietly in the French countryside as Madame de Bernay. She was granted a governor's pension in recognition of her work as Cormason's assistant. You have to be mindful that the French Revolution was happening. And this was at a time when people were very much pro-working class and pro-female. This was a time when anything elitist was being burned, it was being destroyed, and they were really trying to level set the playing field in a kind of economy where it had been built on the people who are poor are really poor and the people who are really rich. The revolution had terrified the royals at that time out of their country land, and they were starting to bring up a lot of things that the working class did not get credit for. So in 1785, it's unknown if Jean Barret had reached out to, you know, some French leaders to say, hey, these are the things that I did that I'm not getting recognition for, or if it was something founded by the French revolutionist. There is speculation that Bougainville, who was still very much alive and very much strong and very much active in society, if he brought it to them because he had a fondness for Jean Barret and really felt bad about the voyage. But either way, the French did give her compensation for all the work that she did on the voyage and the over, you know, 6,000 species that her and Cormason were able to mass in the course of their expedition and really over their lifetime together. Now, the French and really all nations during this time were really fighting to be the first to do anything. We definitely still live in a society where firsts are a big deal. So over 70 species would be named for Cormason. Jean Barret doesn't have any. Cormason had intended to name one after her, but it failed to be published. In one of the articles that we researched that will be featured at the end of this is a quote, and I quote, "A woman dressed as a man, a female botanist in a male-dominated field, and a working-class woman who had traveled farther than most aristocrats, given the importance of her work and the singular nature of her achievements, Barret has clearly made significant contributions to the field and deserves a species named after her." She died in 1807. Barret changed her name multiple times, disguised herself as a man. There are times where you find documentation when her name is spelled B-A-R-E, B-A-R-E-T, or B-A-R-R-E-T. But given her curiosity and her willingness to adapt, she really dedicated her life and her love to the curiosity of natural science. I think the prince who was on the voyage, the young gentleman that I had mentioned before who wore velvet and heels, the one who had hiked with her, in his memoirs, he says of Jean Barret, "I want to give her all the credit for her bravery, a far cry from a gentle pastime afforded to her sex. She dared confront the stress, the dangers, and everything that happened that one could realistically expect on such a voyage. Her adventure should, I think, be included in her history of famous women." And while I do think in the prince's statement, he does normalize the sexual assault and being something that she should realistically expect, I do agree with him in that her adventure should, I think, be included in one of the most famous women. So I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen. This is my very first podcast, and I appreciate any feedback or any tips you can give me. Our next episode will be featured on February 15th, so be sure to tune into all of our social channels and or come back to this page. Feel free to bookmark it, and we will have a new episode present then. At this time, if you do have any feedback, please contact us at contact@liberatingthequeen.com, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. All the research we're crediting will be accompanied to the podcast alongside in a blog form so that you can click on it and get all of the details right there. There's quite a bit of research that went into this, and I would encourage everyone to really research on their own. As we all know, history is written and often written with the lens of a handful of people. It's important to, in this time of age, challenge, question, do all that you can to get to the bottom of historical facts. So thank you, and we'll see you February 15th.